Welcome to Connecting the Drops, a collaboration between Rocky Mountain Community Radio and the Colorado Foundation for Water Education. The foundation is the only nonpartisan nonprofit water educator in Colorado, promoting a better understanding of the state's water resources and issues. To become fluent in Colorado water, visit the foundation online at yourwatercolorado.org. We're talking about the Colorado River tonight, broadcasting live on the Front Range and the Western Slope. I'm Eric Scalak, News Director for KDNK Community Access Radio, speaking to you from our studio in Carbondale on the banks of the Roaring Fork River, a tributary of the mighty Colorado. The river means a lot of different things to us here on the Western Slope: irrigation, recreation, energy production, tourism, none of which are trivial, especially to Colorado's rural communities. Being near the headwaters, we see an almost immeasurable amount of water passed downstream to distant points in Mexico and the dry Southwest, but some of that water is sent back east, and on the other side of a series of diversion pipes running underneath the Rockies is Boulder and Rocky Mountain Community Radio Station, KGNU. Maeve Conran, News Director for KGNU, are you with us?
We are with you. Welcome to all our listeners in the Roaring Fork Valley, listeners to KRCC in Colorado Springs, and KGNU listeners in Boulder and Denver. The irony is not lost on us that, as we discuss drought and the challenges facing the Colorado River system this afternoon, our Front Range listeners are dealing with record rainfall and flooding. Our thoughts are with you, and KGNU's flood information updates will continue after this program. This call-in show is part of Connecting the Drops, a year-long radio series airing on Rocky Mountain community radio stations across Colorado in partnership with the Colorado Foundation for Water Education. Taylor Hawes is with us in Boulder. She is the Nature Conservancy's Colorado River Program Director. She recently testified before a Senate committee on the Colorado River. Good afternoon, Taylor.
Good afternoon.
And Wayne Vandersheer is also with us. He is the General Manager for Water and Wastewater Planning, Water Resources Engineering, Conservation and Forest Service Asset Management for Colorado Springs Utilities. He joins us by phone from Colorado Springs. Good afternoon, Wayne.
Good afternoon.
Here in Carbondale, our guests are KDNK reporter Amy Hedden Marsh, who's been reporting on drought in the Rockies for the last several months, and Jim Pokrant, education and communication specialist for the Colorado River Conservation District.
We'll kick this conversation off with a question for Jim Pokrant. Jim, I mentioned in our introduction that the irony is not lost on us, certainly in the Front Range, that we're discussing drought in this time of extreme rainfall. Does this mean that the drought is over? Are we out of a drought because of this rainfall?
Well, first of all, we on the West Slope are very much taken back by the pictures of devastation that we've seen from the Front Range. And the power of water is just amazing, especially I think when the Boulder area got as much rain, 10 inches or 11 inches, as you know, almost what Glenwood Springs gets in 1 year. So, having said that, the cruel irony here is that, no, you cannot say that drought is over. Big summer storms can certainly benefit river flows, and you could see in this case that it's over the top. But what we really are looking at for breaking the drought is whether or not we have a good snowpack this winter and the next coming winter.
And Taylor Hawes, I'll ask you that question, Taylor. All of this water that we're having here falling on us on the Front Range, how does that impact what we're talking about, the future of the Colorado River and water resources in that river?
It's an excellent question. In my perspective, the future will not look like the past, and we're seeing a real change in how we're receiving precipitation. As Jim mentioned, we really need, you know, our whole system is set up around reservoirs. We need to be getting snow. When we get 18 inches of rain in 4 days, that runner water just runs off. This water that we're getting on the Front Range right now is headed to the Mississippi eventually. Now, it will have a temporary impact on the Western Slope and on Colorado River because it reduces demand. We aren't bringing any water over from the Western Slope right now. But that is such a minor amount of benefit to the Colorado River in the long run, because we have Lake Powell and Lake Mead, the two biggest reservoirs in the country, are less than half full. So this it helps, but it's almost too much. It's just we can't capture it. Our reservoir systems aren't structured to be able to capture this much runoff and rain. So we're going to have to learn new ways of managing our rivers because of these new extreme events that we're experiencing.
Is this an argument to have increased water storage, or is this just beyond any capacity for storing water?
This Wayne may have a perspective on this as well, but in my opinion, this is just too much water. We can't capture it. It's running off in all directions. So it does. We could maybe have more storage, but I think those big reservoirs are not the answer. We may need small reservoirs in key locations to be able to capture more of this water.
Well, Jim Pokrant, I'd like to go back to you. Roughly 27 million people throughout the West rely on the Colorado River for water, energy, and healthy ecosystems. Climate studies indicate that the potential for inadequate water supplies throughout the 14,000-mile river system. Is this a crisis?
Well, it's a crisis coming in very slow motion. But in terms of water planning, yeah, it's generational. So you have to treat it as a crisis because solutions can take 20, 30 years, whether it's even policy or building a new project. So I'd say it's a crisis. If people like to have water at their tap when they go to brush their teeth or take a shower, it's a crisis.
Wayne van der Scheer, we'll go next to you. Colorado Springs, you're in a different water basin, but you do rely heavily on the Colorado River water. Tell us why you rely so heavily on the river.
Well, we probably need to look just a little bit at history. After World War II, there was the substantial economic expansion, the expansion of Fort Carson and the Air Force Academy coming to town. And it turned out, as we know across Colorado, there's often the case there's not enough water in the right place in the right amounts at the right time, and we're seeing that now. The supplies we had in the 1950s were insufficient and unreliable, so in the 1950s we built the Blue River system, which is a tributary to the Colorado River near Hoosier Pass, just south of Breckenridge. And today our 500,000 customers and their economy benefits from 4 Colorado River transbasin systems delivered through 3 pipelines, soon to be 4 when our southern delivery system is completed. So in any given year, we're 60 to 70% dependent on the Colorado River, and so we are very interested in both the Colorado River and the amount of snowpack that sits up above it.
Let's talk a little bit about the Colorado River Compact. Every single drop of water in that river is allocated through what is quite a complex system of water law. It's a legal agreement called the Colorado River Compact. Taylor Hawes, what exactly is the compact and what does it do?
The compact is an agreement between the 7 basin states in the Colorado River Basin, so Wyoming, Colorado, Utah, New Mexico, Nevada, Arizona, and California. It governs the use and allocation of the water. So back in 1922, when California was developing very quickly, the upper basin, in particular Colorado, became very worried that they would not get their fair share of the river. And so in 1922, which happens to be one of the wettest periods in history of the Colorado River, they negotiated agreement to split the river up. So the upper basin states, basically cutting off at right below Lake Powell, received 7.5 million acre feet of water. And an acre foot of water is 1 football field, 1 foot deep, or 326,000 gallons. The upper basin on an annual basis is supposed to get 7.5 million acre feet. The lower basin is supposed to get 7.5 million acre feet. Lakes Powell and Mead govern the water, and we equalize those reservoirs to make sure the lower basin gets its allocation and we get ours in the upper basin. And then a treaty, there's a 1944 treaty between the U.S. and Mexico where we deliver additional 1.5 million acre feet to Mexico. And so all of this, the thing about the compact that people need to understand when they start talking about revising it is it's a function of man. We can change it. We do change it all the time. We have side agreements between the states. As long as all 6-7 states can come together and come to an agreement, they can change the compact. They're not changing the underlying structure of the agreement. I think that's important for people to understand. But we can have side agreements that help govern the river more flexibly.
That's Taylor Hawes with the Nature Conservancy's Colorado River. She's their Colorado River Program Director. She recently testified before a Senate committee on the Colorado River. I'm Maeve Conran at the KGNU studio. Back to you at KDNK, Eric.
All right. Well, I'm going to have our reporter Amy Haddon-Marsh jump in here. Amy?
I have a question for Jim Pokrant. Can you talk about the Colorado River Cooperative Agreement, which was finally signed in July and was 5 years in the making? Who got what? How does that work?
The Colorado River Cooperative Agreement relates to Denver Water seeking more water from the Fraser River system, principally for the northern end of their system. So they wanted to enlarge actually a Front Range reservoir, Gross Reservoir, near Boulder. Many people will know where that is. And that's where water is received through the Moffett Tunnel from the Fraser River system. So they had to go through a permitting process. As many people know, trying to do a project can become very ugly. And what Denver Water did was they made a business decision and a policy decision to try and hammer out an arrangement where there would be net benefit to the West Slope, all of the West Slope, and in the case of Denver Water, that they would be able to permit this project that would get them 18,000 acre feet more a year, roughly, and help them enlarge Gross Reservoir and firm up their water supply for that end of the system. But what's noteworthy about this is Denver made a business and a political decision to do to make a deal under a new principle of bringing in a lot of stakeholders. So it just wasn't Grand County that was at the table for this discussion. It included Summit County and Garfield County and the River District and all these interests along the main stem of the Colorado. So it's pretty significant in that Denver's political and business decision was to reach out and try and create benefits for the West Slope, while they would be certainly taking a little bit more of the hydrograph in spring to help fill an enlarged Gross Reservoir. They're still not permitted yet, but the way has been almost all the way cleared that there will not be West Slope opposition. And the good part is that if Denver were to want to do another program, another project, it would have to be collaborative and something that West Slope would also want to see.
Well, can you talk about the Shoshone Power Plant in Glenwood Springs, which is owned by Xcel Energy, and the role it played in the cooperative agreement?
Sure. The Shoshone Power Plant is in Glenwood Canyon, and it's the biggest, largest, oldest senior water right on the system, and it's from 1902. And it would therefore call out the Trans Mountain diversions, among many others. So what that does is those who do divert from the Colorado River, if they want to keep diverting when the Shoshone Power Plant call is on, principally from the middle summer through late summer and fall, then they have to replace water or stop diverting. What that does, that creates a steady flow through the canyon, about 1,250 CFS, that benefits the rafting industry, recreation, angling, municipal water users. So it's very important to the West Slope that this water right remain active, because it pulls water down the river, more water than would be there naturally, actually.
And you're talking about the Glenwood Canyon.
I am. And, of course, that assists the West Slope.
Thanks, Eric. I'd like to go next to the phone lines. We have listeners from around the state calling in. First, I'll welcome Carlo, calling from Buena Vista. Good afternoon. Welcome to the show. What's your question?
Well, I do not have a question, but I'd like to make a couple of points.
Please go ahead.
And, I pleaded my case many a times to the Chaffee County commissioners. I could not see how sustainability would be to take spring water that's natural out of the Arkansas River and truck it to Denver to make bottled water for Nestle, number one. Number two, I don't feel that it's proper in these times that we keep allowing these ski resorts to make water for artificial snow. And during my project looking at the water consumption and the Nestle water for bottling, I looked at the soldiers in Afghanistan and Iraq, and I wanted to see if there's any of our soldiers that were dying of dehydration. I found out that no, but there were women dying in their sleep because they wouldn't go to the bathroom after 3 o'clock in the afternoon because they were being raped and stuff. And the association with always grabbing water and taking water from the western slope to the eastern slope is just going against Mother Nature. And I just feel that we keep grabbing water and keep grabbing water, and we just have to start relying on Mother Nature referring back to our aquifers. And if this Keystone Pipeline goes through the United States, it's going to definitely hurt the eastern, southwest, southeast corner of Colorado. And just, I think we have to really put the brakes on a lot of things that are happening.
Okay.
And I'm wondering who's overseeing the reconstruction and hiring the level of the Homestake Reservoir.
Okay,
to
Carlo.
Take more water from the Colorado.
Thank you for that call. We'll see if we can get some answers. Many, many questions and comments in there. Maybe, Taylor, would you like to take this? In terms of, there are obviously many demands on water. We're looking at ski resorts, you know, snowmaking. He mentioned there a very specific case happening in Chaffee County, water being bottled for bottled water to be sold then. Any thoughts then on some of the comments that Carlo made?
There is a lot of demands on the river, whether it's the Colorado River or on our rivers on the east slope or the Front Range. And we are working in Colorado. There's a state water planning process that's ongoing right now. Wayne and I are both involved in that. And we're looking for solutions. We're looking to find ways to be sustainable in the state. And I think we are going to have to take a hard look at energy use, for water for energy use. We're going to have to prioritize some things. We're going to have to find balances. I think the agreement that Jim mentioned is a great example, the cooperative agreement, where we can find solutions. We just need to have a shift in our political will to find the solutions that are sustainable.
Well, does this have to be a zero-sum situation, given the many demands on the Colorado River and indeed all the water systems in the entire western U.S.? Does it have to be a situation with winners and losers? I mean, is there proven collaborations? Are there proven collaborations that you can point to say, well, yes, we can actually please most people most of the time?
Well, I certainly hope that we can find solutions and it's not a zero-sum game because, from my experience, the reason the environmental community is involved is because often the loser is the environment. And so we're trying to find solutions. And so we believe that if we're at the table, we can craft solutions with others who are like-minded, who want to find solutions. And we do have examples. The Colorado River Cooperative Agreement is one. We worked on a project on Elkhead Reservoir, which is up in the northwest part of the state, where we enlarged a reservoir and basically split the water between endangered fish, the community, and agriculture and power. And so I think we've got examples of that. But we've been working on this in Colorado to find a path forward for our future. We know that we have a shortfall to meet municipal needs on the Front Range. So we are going to have to do things differently. I think we're going to have to look for ways of sharing water with farmers. Perhaps we ask farmers to fallow at times so that we can provide more water to cities and rivers in times when in dry years. So I think there's solutions out there, but it's going to take we need to move away from that history of fighting. And there's a saying in the West, you know, whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting. And it certainly is our history, but I think we need to move away from that.
We'll be going back to the phones. Jed in the North Fork Valley in just a moment. Just a reminder that this is Connecting the Drops. We'll be back in a moment.